everybody. Thanks for tuning in to Revolution Radio. Back after 1 week on Tuesday night, this is the Idavox Report.
Hey, y'all. Hiya, B. I'm back. Brian's back. Christian is taking a break. He'll be back next week. It's been a good couple of weeks since we last spoke to you. And if you guys follow Idavox, we haven't really gotten any articles up. Been a little busy. We cleared out the One People's Project storage space and moved everything into the office. And I have been in the process of just trying to put everything in its place. Do you know what it's like to put 30 years of papers in their place when they never were in a place?
I'm finding, I can't imagine.
I don't even want to discuss what I've been finding. I can go run over and pull out old American Renaissance stuff, old refuse and resist stuff. If no one knows what I was like, old Free Mamiya stuff. I'm trying to protect, trying to save him from the death penalty. I mean, stuff is just going back. Old Free Mandela stuff. I'm just like, and for the record, old punk flyers, old show flyers from back in the day. So I'm just like, it's a nice little treasure trove that's going on.
And am I coming through now? Or am I still delayed?
No, you're not delayed. I can hear you just fine now.
There we go. See, we got the around the technology blocks or whatever. I hope we stay good. Hey, you're talking to a guy that just moved his whole family 500 miles after being in a little crappy house for like 15 years. And I mean, the amount of shit you can just build up and you've got to move is overwhelming. Yeah. It becomes overwhelming, you know?
Yeah, I have a habit of just always moving. So one of the things that over the past 30 years, all I've done was just move and move. And every place I go, I just get more shit. It was getting to the point where I had this huge ass record collection and I just gave it to my friend because I just kept on tired of lugging it around. And I'm glad he's a friend because I can always go back to visit my old records. Which is funny. I think I still have a few. I still have the first new edition. Yeah. I still have the first new edition album.
You have anything by Shaka Khan?
I never bought a Shaka Khan record. I mean, from back in the day, in the 80s, I didn't buy any Shaka Khan. I'm surprised. I should have.
Were you into Shaka Khan back in the day? I didn't really get into Shaka Khan much later.
I mean, even while I was playing some Shaka Khan live from YouTube just a couple of weeks ago while I was trying to straighten things out around here. No, I love me some Shaka Khan. So
I think we had spoken about her before, and I really didn't come to appreciate her as an artist until, you know, a little bit later, like after her hits and everything. But man, like there was a documentary, I think it's on Netflix or something or maybe one of those like VH1 specials or something where they got into the behind the scenes type work and very innovative.
Yeah,
really.
I saw that.
Yeah.
And there's a guy named Vlad. He has this YouTube channel called Vlad TV and he's interviewing he's good for interviewing, people from back in the day, although I don't think it was him that interviewed Shaka Khan. I think it was an actress named Llewellyn, something like that. She's in Coming to America and a whole bunch of other stuff. And I always mess up her name, just like I mess up everybody else, it seems like. But, I don't have my headphones on. Well, I'll have them on later.
Jamie's on the chat. They're asking us to keep posting our stuff. And we will, if you know, like I said at the top of the show, Jamie, we took a week off. We got to recharge our batteries. And doing these shows takes a lot of work. So we took 1 week off, but that's it, Jamie. Don't worry. We're back to work full time. And don't worry. The network's long and strong, sister. We appreciate it.
Yeah, the thing is, there's just a lot of work that we're doing, not just in regards to the moving in my case, but there's also, I'm just trying to catch up to everything that's been going on. We got the Derek Chauvin case that I've been paying attention to. And honestly, it looks like he's going to get convicted. I've never seen a police chief Now I said it looks. I said it looks like we have
been. Let me ask you. Why? Why do you feel that way?
Because we have been fooled before. I mean,
yeah, that's about
the 31st anniversary of one of those times.
Rodney King comes to mind. Yeah. I mean, and there could be. I mean, we could sit here all day and discuss. Why do you feel differently? Because I feel differently too. I'll be honest with you. I feel differently too. But why do you feel that way?
I mean, I feel that he's because I've never seen. Why do I feel like he's going to get convicted?
Yeah. As opposed to where Rodney King and all the guys get off the hook. Why is Chauvin going to go?
Our only reason why I would say he will get convicted is because I've never seen a police chief go on to testify against his against one of his officers. I've never seen that before. That's different. In addition, I don't even want to say the whole everybody's eyes are on this thing, so they better not screw it up, because Lord knows that don't mean a damn thing. But I think things are going differently. Now, let's be fair. The only thing that we have seen so far is the prosecution. We haven't heard what the defense has to bring. But considering that the defense is bringing up somebody as a witness, as like an expert witness, who himself apparently is being looked into, being investigated. I can't remember the dude's name, but it doesn't bode well. But we're going to have to see how things...
I mean, they've already stated, I haven't personally watched a lot of the reports, and I think Jamie brings up a point. Convicted, yeah, but convicted of what? I mean, are we going to get some kind of reckless manslaughter and time served charge? I mean, they could be convicted of a lot. I feel the same way you do, and there's a lot being made of this breaking of the thin blue line. And people actually testifying who would normally not. And it kind of started that day. The 911 operator on the tape says, hey, you can call me a snitch if you want, but somebody's got to look at this and what's going on, as the live stream was coming in from the body cams, right? So, you know, right away, this started to crack. So it was that blatant of a murder. It was so blatant of a murder that this guy wanted to kill this guy, and that was his intent. It couldn't be ignored from the very start.
Well,
and
the thing is,
you know, we got to say that the country erupted in protest. I mean,
right? Is that what it takes to get?
That's a pretty high bar to attain to get justice for a murdered person. And is this going to be the bar from now on? Do we have to basically storm the streets for a month or 2 months straight to get one conviction of a police murder? Or
we got to storm the streets so that this never happens again. We got to storm the streets so that we basically just uproot and reform everything. Not even reform, deconstruct and then reconstruct everything that has been going on for the past over 150 years. I mean,
400.
I was on a podcast yesterday, and I brought up, I cannot forget this dude's name. I think his name is Dave Grossman. But he is but this guy has this, does these police teachings. He does classes for police. He's a law enforcement trainer, and he has, and this is what Wikipedia calls it. David Allen Grossman is an American author and law enforcement trainer who are specialized in the study of psychology of killing. And he's teaching police officers how to conduct themselves and how to approach situations in the streets. And basically what he calls his teachings, his lessons, is killology. And to give you an idea of how bad that is, we're talking about Philando Castile was killed by one of the cops that took that seminar. So It can go either way. He can be cleared, or sorry, Jamie, he could be convicted of less than murder. I mean, they're not even looking at first degree. I did not see them going for first degree in the first place. Third degree is the best they think that they can do. So we'll see if he gets that. He might even get manslaughter. But I'm also curious about what happens when he gets sentenced, too, because I remember when the police officer that killed the Kai Gurley was convicted, he ended up getting probation. Akai Gurley, by the way, for those who don't know, was walking around. I think it was Staten Island. No one was committing a crime. No one was called. No one called the police. He just happened to turn the corner. The police officer got startled, and that was the first thing he did was shoot him.
I'm looking at this guy Grossman that you were talking about. Did you know he also testified in the trial of Timothy McVeigh?
Yep. Yeah. I mean, the guy is a mess. The guy is a complete mess, and he's dangerous as hell. So much so that when people started talking about him,
as part of the backlash from George Floyd and the protests and this article I'm reading right now, and is that they banned his books from police trainings and started teaching police to not listen to him because his his philosophy and his teachings are basically to numb you to the psychological effects of murdering people.
And I'm just going
to
be honest with you.
You should not be numb to the psychological effects of murdering people, because that's what keeps you from murdering people. And once you remove those psychological fears of killing people, you've created murder. Yeah. Good job.
And I'll tell you something. One of the things that I don't like about these cop shows in particular is that they've now have gone into this thing where they have several episodes. If you watch all the TV cop shows, there are two things that bothered me about cop shows. There's a lot of things that bother me about cop shows in this day and age. One, the whole thing about the upperly Negro pastor. They all have them. They all try to have this like stereotypical Al Sharpton swagger about themselves. And they basically try to pass it off as he's just stirring things up in black communities so that he can get a buck. That's basically the premise of every time
you dismiss a
pastor on cop shows. That's one thing I don't like. The things that are going on, the other thing that's going on is that if you watch cop shows today, they all seem to have an episode where the star of the show shoots somebody that he or she thought had a gun, but then all of a sudden they realize that he or she didn't have a gun. And then of course the uppity black pastor shows up to start protesting him and all that. And he's in shock. He's scared. Everybody's freaking the hell out
because being attacked by this evil black community.
And meanwhile, we got Dave Grossman out there saying, don't worry about it.
The propaganda.
Don't have any feelings about it.
Now the propaganda is pretty deep in society, and you know it's hard. It's honestly becoming more aware of it. Like the more aware of it, and the more sensitive you are to it, the harder it is to take. But you in particular are one of the people that I really admire, because you kind of force yourself to be exposed to these things that, quite frankly, most people wouldn't put up with. I mean, there's things directed at you specifically as a black man. You know, that you absorb because you want to be able to fight it. But you're a rarity. Most people are just not going to, you know, listen. And for good reason. Who wants to hear this shit? Like, I get that. I honestly, like, I guess, you know, how do you cope psychologically and still be able to fight on? Because take in a lot of this shit that's fucked up, man. I got to say.
I would say that my parents basically instilled upon me the gift of patience. That and the fact that you know that they're kicking, that you're kicking their ass too. I mean, when you really educate yourself to the things that have gone on in the past, compare it to what's going on now, you sit there, put it together, and you say, we got this. We got this. All we got to do is convince ourselves that we got this. I mean, I think our biggest enemy can be ourselves sometimes when we don't even look at the kind of strength that we have. But last year, we made sure we had that strength. We showed that. When George Floyd died, incidentally, because this is going to lead us to our guest today, because I don't want to get into talking and end up screwing up the time. when George Floyd died, when George Floyd was murdered, I should say, that was on the same day, May 25th, in Paris. there was a Roma student, a 14-year-old Roma kid in Paris that had gotten beat down by the police. It got overshadowed by what happened with George Floyd. But in the wake of how everyone responded to George Floyd, they got on top of it in Paris. And that brings us to what we're going to talk about today, about who we talked to yesterday. A couple of weeks ago, I talked to the last time we had the show, the last episode, I talked about some webinars that I was on. One where I talked to German anti-fascists, and another where I talked to several anti-fascists from several countries around Europe, around the globe, Germany, Norway, definitely. I want to get the folks on Norway from Norway back on at some point, Canada, the UK. And we also talked to Tanja Vasic of the Minority Initiative in Serbia, and her focus and her concerns are how the Roma people are being treated in Serbia. And you take a look at what's going on with us as Black people here in the States, and basically around the world for that matter. There's a mirror of that when it comes to the Roma people. When you start going to places like Paris or Belgrade, where Tanja Vasic is from, you realize that, you know, it is all really one attack. And I have to preface this. I have to point out point something out here. When I go out and try to cause grief to the American Renaissance Conference that takes place every year, one of the important things to remember that this is a neo-fascist conference that brings in neo-fascists from all over the world. You know, and my attitude has always been, if we have our American fascists bringing networking with fascists global, other fascists globally, we got to network with anti-fascists globally. So let this be one of the first efforts in that regard. I would like to have at some point, not this year, but next year, I would like to have an international anti-fascist conference taking place. I would like to see that happen here in North America. I think North America needs it. I'm quite sure Europe is loaded with it, but North America really needs one. And if you don't think it needs one, watch when we announce and all the Fox News idiots start complaining about it. You will be convinced that we need one. But to get the ball rolling in, we really ultimately just simply need to network with anti-fascists around the world. And when you listen to Tanja talk about what they are dealing with in Belgrade, in Serbia, you're going to notice some similarities, a lot of them. And me and Brian were pointing them out as we were going along. Everyone, I want to just introduce y'all to Tanja Vasic of the Minority Initiative. She's and we're going to have some contact information as we go along with the interview, and then we're going to come back and we're going to be talking about some other things that are happening over the next couple of days. So let us just roll the videotape, and we'll be back in a bit.
Me here. I'm Tanja Vasic. I have MA in psychology. I'm coming from Belgrade, Serbia, and representing Minority Initiative. Minority Initiative is a political organization, and it aims to become a political party in Serbia, representing minorities. In Serbia, we have a lot of minorities, but one of the biggest is a Roma national minority, and many other people who are claiming to be or seen as a Roma. So these people are facing, unfortunately, on daily basis, racism. And that special sort of racism is so-called anti-Gypsyism. And it's very, very much in ground and in place in Serbia, unfortunately, but not only in Serbia, as well in Western Balkan and another European countries that are originally ex-communist countries like Hungary, like Bulgaria, like Romania, like Poland, like Slovakia, Czechia, and so on. So racism against Roma is very present. It's increasing, unfortunately. You can see on a daily basis a lot of cases, a lot of attacks, a lot of things happening all around the place. And that's one of the reasons why Minority Initiative is taking that issue very serious. So what we are trying to approach is to put it on a political scene and to approach that on the highest level, what is possible in any state. And that is to be discussed in the national parliament. So that's what is our aim. That's what we are trying to do. And that's what we hope we are going to do to succeed in 1 year.
Now, the political structure in Serbia, is it similar? And when I say similar, in regards to breakdowns of parties, you said Minority Initiative is trying to become a political party in within parliament. What is the basic makeup of the current parliament right now?
Okay. The parliament, I just wanted to give a bit of background information. Usually we have not only two parties, as you in USA, we have many parties. So, of course, they are coming from the left to the right or other way around. And at the moment, unfortunately, we have one national party that is pretending to be somehow central, but actually is right party. Not officially, but behind the scene, it's working on that principles. So, and as well, you don't have a big opposition at this time in the parliament. We are having only some little national minority parties representing Muslims and representing Hungarian people and Albanian people. So, and that's 2-3 member of parliaments per each of those parties. So you don't have another big party is a socialist party that is as well at this time in the parliament. And this national party and the socialist party are constituting the government at the moment. And this government, unfortunately, is very right oriented. It's a majority. There are majority Serbian parties. They are very pro nationalist oriented. And the minorities and the people who are more democratic or central oriented are not having their opportunity to stand for their opinions or statements or whatsoever in the parliament. And the reasons why Minority Initiative is initiating all these questions and topics among Roma community is actually because in the last 12 years, there is no Roma representative in the parliament representing or being appointed from one Roma political party. There are some Roma in parliament, but they are as well working for or working with majority Serbian parties. And in the last 12 years, we have really increasement of somehow political isolation of Roma, and in a way decadence, because Roma people are not somebody who is directly represented by Roma. They are not having opportunity to say what they need and what they stand for. They are blackmailed by majority parties during the campaigns. So literally blackmailed, meaning you're going to lose your scholarship or job, or you're going even to lose your social benefits, because many Roma people, they're really living in a big poverty and they're beneficiaries of a social care system. So they're blackmailed by that. Or even what is almost not possible to imagine is that they are paid, literally paid in cash, 10 to 15 euro per vote. So they're, because they're really struggling with with the poverty on a daily basis. Most of them are living without job and living in non-hygienic or non-legal settlements. This 10 to 15 euros per family member who is an adult member who can vote means at that day some money. But if you compare that, that is one day when they are paid, and then you have another 4 years that somebody is making a political career and any other political income, but as well economic income on your vote, it's not comparable. And that is what is happening in reality. And the Roma people, I just want to emphasize, they're the most poor class or group of people living in Serbia.
It sounds familiar, doesn't it, Brian?
No, it doesn't.
I wanted to ask a little more about the roots of the Roma people in Serbia. How long have they been present in the region? Are they native to that region? Are they? Can you give me an idea of the history of the Roma people in Serbia?
Certainly 500 to 600 years. So their domicile population there. Certainly, I maybe even more, but. For this 500 to 600 years, there are records on that.
Okay, because that was one of the things. I thought I heard something. Okay. I'm sorry. So I'm sure that with all the lack of, I should say, of representation. To underscore a fact that there's been quite a few conflicts. Some probably have flared up into full on street actions and things like that. Can you tell us anything about that?
Yes. Look, before all this is happening in the last 9 years, because you have to understand. And as well, there is a. I have to give you again a bit of background information. I think that old people in the United States still do remember Milosevic regime and that war in ex-Yugoslavia. And after the changing of Milosevic regime, we had a certain period of time democratic parties who were in the government. And after that, there is from one. Right-wing party, as an outcome, is a newborn baby, the new national party. And this new national party, at the time being, at that time, 10 years ago, has presented itself as a very democratic, as a very open-minded, and somebody who wants to put in place the changes to bring Serbia to European Union, etc., etc. So then they got the power, and then again they started with again not very democratic system to develop, unfortunately. And I cannot speak a lot about demonstrations or protests in the last 9 years. Actually, the last biggest protest which was done by Roma community was a solidarity protest in the 2010 when. My husband and I, we were directly engaged in organizing that with another European countries, because maybe you can remember there was a problem with Roma in France. So they want to expel Roma from Romania originally and Bulgaria back to their countries from France. And... at that time, we had developed, and that was the last big protest, unfortunately. So even the movements are very slow or quiet at the time being. That's a problem, because Roma people somehow they lost their courage, and they're not very supported by any other group. There is a lack of solidarity, and there is a lack of commitments to the change in this group of people. And I'm talking about officially it is 150,000 Roma people, but unofficially, and that's again, there is a difference in a census because the census is not properly done. It's about 450,000 people is the difference. So it means that about 600,000 Roma are living in Serbia, and you have officially only 150, which are all the stories and stories. And of course, just to come to your previous question about are the people, all the Roma people, their domicile, they're not living only as a domicile population in Serbia. They're living in the whole Balkan, as well in Kosovo, they were domicile. So when it has all happened with the Kosovo in 1999, a lot of Roma had to leave Kosovo because they were not welcome by Albanians to stay there. Albanians wanted the country for themselves. So it was always the Albanian or the Serbian question, but never Roma issue. And they were living about 250,000 Roma. And now you have about maybe 20,000 living in Kosovo. So they were not welcome in Serbia because they saw them as a burden on the top of their very fragile economy. And they were as well not well welcome in Kosovo to stay. So some of them stayed in Serbia. Some of them tried to go to Germany, Switzerland, Denmark, etc., etc. And unfortunately, with the new migrants crisis in European Union, you have the deportation of Roma from Kosovo back to Serbia as a safe state because of the new migrant crisis from Syria. So it's a very big issue among Roma from the Balkan.
Okay. And on top of that, if there wasn't enough problems, you have to deal with this Leviathan movement that is causing a bunch of problems as well. I mean, a couple of months ago, and I actually knew about this one, a couple of months ago, they attacked someone, and it came across to me on the peripheral because I understand a couple of the members of the Leviathan movement had gotten arrested behind it, probably 6 or 7 members. And I wanted to ask, what is the, first of all, let's tell everybody what the Leviathan movement is. And also what was the story behind that and where is it today?
Yeah. Okay, so this movement or this organization, they are a far-right organization. Even though they are not presenting again themselves as a right organization, they want to that people see them as somebody who protects animals, something like the people. But if you remember that even the fascist in or the Nazis in Germany before the Second World War were the ones who were protecting animals. They started with some of those actions. So Leviathan started like that in Serbia. They were starting with protecting animals. Then there again immunization among children, etc., etc. They have some of their standpoints, and then they in this protection of animals they're very radical, but of course they're actually exercising the power, and they look like some very equipped and performed military troop, not regularly, but they behave and look like that. And 2 years ago, they entered one of the Roma settlements in a town of Niš, that's south of Serbia or west south of Serbia. They entered that settlement because they saw a boy who, what's the name of the, he hipped a bit of his horse. That horse goes, horse should go faster. And they saw that he hit him. And they filmed that. And afterwards, they entered the settlement, asked for the boy, about 10, 50, those guys, they're really like bodybuilders, etc. They found the boy and took the horse from him. Because they said, you don't know how to keep your horse in a proper state. You're not looking after him properly. So we are going to take your horse to feed them, to feed him, and then to give you back. So it was a lot like a terror, mm-hmm. Terror action. Of course, all the Roma people in the Roma settlement were very upset and afraid. And on the top of that, okay, they took a horse, they went out. Nobody from the state institutions reacted on that. Nobody made any sort of intervention, any sort of legal action against the movement. So actually, what you can read from the lines or between the lines is that this movement has some sort of support from the government. They're like paramilitary group within the Serbian state. And then you have some even Roma representatives. There is somebody calling Roma National Council, and that council should counsel the state regarding the culture and information of Roma, etc., etc. And these guys from this Roma council went to this group of people to hug them and sit together with them and say, we are all good friends. So it's exaggerating. We were trying to really put that issue on a high level. But again, we had only a bit of support from some media. Maybe one, two journalists talked about that, but nothing more than that. So this case is like a basic case of human rights violation and what one ring right group can do in Serbia against Roma, but nobody is doing anything legally against that group of people or organization or whatsoever they are, because sometimes their movement, sometimes their organization, they're changing their status and yeah. So it's
see, what I was thinking too, it's like, if that's what's going on, because it's similar to what's happening here in the States, you have groups of thugs. They go by various names. And we have a government that is kind of like hands off when it comes to their activities for the most part. I mean, sometimes they do things and sometimes they don't. And that lends itself to people saying, okay, if the government isn't going to do anything about them, if it even looks like that they're supporting them, that means we have to try to protect ourselves. And that becomes Antifa and a lot of pushback coming from the communities and from people in the streets. Have we seen that as of late when it comes to Leviathan?
Look, unfortunately, when we are speaking about Roma population, they are, first of all, they're extremely poor and they're very right. much afraid of any sort of losing their, that what they have. So they have a lot of and long lasting bad experiences within Serbian state. Then you have these people are not very educated. So you have low scale of education among Roma people. That's a second issue. And then, of course, they feel somehow abandoned from the state. And I think that it's missing the exactly that point that they have to look after themselves. That is one of our agenda. We are, what we try to do and why we are already in very active in this world against racism movement and such movement is to learn and encourage our community to build up solidarity, to build up this sort of courage and civil not only initiative but to be an active in helping your community, working with your community, because there is a lack of those sort of Not only activities. I think the attitude. It's lack of attitudes.
So what outside? So have you been getting any kind of help outside of Serbia, outside of the communities and things like that? Because we met via a webinar. We met via a webinar that was bringing people from all over Europe and Canada, myself from the States. What kind of outreach have you been able to make beyond the borders to see if anybody can help with this issue that's going on down your way?
Yes, that's very important point. That's what we are as well trying to do. We are trying to meet another people, to let them know what is happening, that they hear all these issues, because as well there is a lack of information. Because when something happens to Roma community, as well there is some sort of media blockade. You don't read a lot about it in media. So we have to build up a serious partnership with the Antifa organizations and with the people who are for human rights internationally, who are willing to help and to bring about their knowledge and know-how and maybe even themselves into actions. Because we need this definitely. And that's what we are trying to do. That's what we have been talking on that day, on that webinar, because I think it's a critical point that people do understand that anti-Gypsyism is extremely deeply rooted. It's extremely deeply rooted. It's something that you don't even, even for the people who are saying, no, I'm not racist in the Europe or even in Serbia, they mean that toward Afro Americans or Afro-European people. So they will say, no, I'm not racist. But then when you come to Roma people, oh, the gypsies, yeah, and just you know. So there is completely another level of recognition and acceptance of what does it mean to be racist toward Roma. So that's what we are doing at the moment. We are trying to find organizations, people, groups willing to help us in, first of all, establishing one network of people who will become aware of what does it mean to be anti-Gypsyist. And then to start working on that issue, because I think that even the institutions, and that is the big issue and serious issue, even the institutions in different states, you have institutionalized discrimination, and we need help. Yeah. We need definitely help. We need the people to work with us closely. We need the organizations to work with us closely and to exchange experiences, to exchange know-how. Minority Initiative is willing as well to host people who wants to be volunteers in Serbia and to work with Roma communities. And there are a lot of things to do. So, yes. Yeah.
People really Brian, where is? Welcome. Yeah, I guess I was curious in Serbia, is there civil rights legislation on the books that's simply not enforced by the state? Or do you need more legislation on the books? Obviously, the enforcement isn't there. But as far as legislative activity, do you seek this government to help assist you by passing laws that create a more tolerant society? Or are they no help at all?
Look, you have the legislation. There is a legislation in place. So there is an anti-discrimination law. And you have national minorities law, etc., etc. But at the end of the day, it's not in practice. And that is a lack of, again, there are lack of different sort of things. First of all, you need the patterns or you need the mechanisms within a state that law can be in practice. So if you have only a law and that nobody is working on that law or using that law, then it's like not existing. So I will try to explain you there is, just for an example, just given as an example, there was a case in October that one married couple was beaten in the middle of public transport in Belgrade, beaten by one guy. The police came when they got out at the bus stop. The police came. The couple was registered. The young man who did it was registered. They even had one witness. And then, when that is over, the police made some sort of report on that, what has happened, yeah? And this report stayed within police. It is not automatically gone to the to prosecution. So you have no direct link between police on one side and the court on the other side, or some body in between, or whatsoever acting against that discrimination. So you have as well some NGOs working on the, or offices of lawyers working on discrimination, but again, they're not directly involved in that. You have all this part of a system to put together to work. So there is a lack of practice of that legislation, put it that way. Maybe that's the best how to explain what is missing. We were trying Minority Initiative tried to develop a system and to propose that system to the state, but until now we have no even comment on that, what we wrote. So
there's a lot of, and I know that Daryl's sitting there kind of like, oh, I've heard this before, I've heard that before. There's a lot of reflect. Believe me, our societies aren't so different in the way we treat people here who are minorities or traditionally oppressed. And I've seen that political whitewashing of people putting on, like you said, putting up legislation or maybe having laws on the books. But if police ignore the intent of legislation, which is to create justice, then it's just pointless. But they'll always be there to get reelected or to take the stage and to get applause for being, you know, anti-racist or creating these environments, when in reality they're doing very, very little in material conditions for those of us, you know, in the grassroots. So I wish you luck with that. I mean, it's a struggle, and I do hope, and I hear your calls for assistance, and I do hope that our audience out there, you know, gets in touch with you. And if you have any public facing stuff, I mean, get in touch if this touches your heart and you have some advice and strategy and help. I mean, we've seen that before with Wisconsin and Palestine, Black Lives Matter and Palestinian connections. So we've seen international cooperation on the racial justice and the social justice fronts here in America, and it's nice to see that kind of cooperation between comrades, you know.
Exactly. Ooh. that's important cooperation. I just want as well to say again, and that's something that is very important to know, and maybe this is an opportunity, on the day when the George Floyd was killed, at the same day, maybe just a couple of hours difference, one Roma boy, he was 16 years old at that time, was beaten by French police at the same day near Paris, the same hour maybe, because of the differences in time zone. And I tried on that case to inform broader public. It was almost impossible because everybody was under the idea of Black Lives Matter, which is important, which is very unfortunate as well case with the death of George Floyd, and we always felt extremely upset when we see things like that happening in the world, because it's only showing how this world is still living on this racial discrimination standpoint. But on the other hand, we were trying as well to tell the story, yes, that is happening in America, but that is happening in Europe. And Europe is somehow showing very off when they wanted even to make some sort of speeches, how they're more open, how they're more anti-racist, how they're cradle of civilization, etc., etc. But unfortunately, it's not true.
And Europe is the cradle of imperialism.
Yes, sharing the same idea. And I think they should see what is happening in their backyard and front yard, because these cases are very obvious. And I think that what we do believe, and what we are really trying to spread our mission is, please be aware, we need a sort of solidarity, we need to work together. And there are people in the United States, and we do believe in those powers, that there are people who are against racism, who felt for many centuries what racism is, and they can help us. And we need this sort of understanding, because I think that everybody who is fighting against racism and who is feeling racism on a daily basis and facing it has that experience as own experience. But sometimes we forget that there are other people living in the same conditions, more or less the same.
Oops, we lost.
The same social illnesses. And I deeply, believe that racism is a social illness.
All right, before we cut out, before we end, we definitely want to make sure that people are able to contact you and contact anybody that's working on this issue. And hopefully we can get you out here, because we were also talking about an international anti-fascist conference. And that's still in the planning stages, but it is about, as I started this conversation off with, it is time we all start uniting with each other. So for anybody who is watching this right now or listening to it right now, how can they get in touch with you? Where can they find more information?
Okay, our website is in development. We don't still have it, but we have a profile on Facebook, and unfortunately, it's written in Serbian, but I will add English name. So for everybody who wants to find us, it's going to be easiest way to do it through Facebook. We have Minority Initiative Facebook profile, so they can contact us at this time being through that. As well, we have one of the profiles on the Twitter as well, Minority Initiative, so they can contact us. And I will give you all details and the email address you have, I think, so you can share it. You can put it on a broadcast. It's Minority Initiative, but it's in Serbian, Manjinska Inicijativa at Gmail. So you have that one, you can share that one as well. So everybody who wants to contact us, it's we are happy. We are happy to be contacted. We are happy to answer, to respond, to make what we can, of course.
All right, excellent, excellent. One last thing. I'm really curious about the flag behind you. Could you tell us exactly what it represents?
That's a Roma flag.
That's the Roma flag. This is where I am learning stuff. I never knew the Roma flag. Yeah.
So this is the grass, this is the sky, and this is the wheel. And that means that we are all around the place. The earth is ours. the whole world is ours.
I love it.
So you can join our club.
Hey, it sounds like a good one to join. So
yes. So everybody who feels as a cosmopolitan is actually in a way a part of Roma family. So do feel like that.
Thank you for the life's lesson.
Thank you for having me. Have a nice day.
Thank you. Tanya Vassi.
Very nice to meet you. Thank you very much for being on Revolution.
You as well. It was my pleasure.
Thank you. Yeah, I wasn't sure, incidentally, that she was going to bring up. I couldn't remember if she had brought up the case in Paris in this discussion or in another one that that I had with her earlier. But I'm glad she did. And I definitely want to thank her for being, Tanya Vasich for being on the show. You see her email on the screen right there. Like she says, that's the Minority Initiative in Serbian. You can also find her on Facebook. We had that link earlier. You will also have all of this contact information with this video if you're watching it on YouTube. If you're on Spotify, well, I guess, can you also add information as well on all the other?
You have to go to the website. If they're listening on Spotify, they get the little synopsis. They might show up. I mean, if they don't show up in the synopsis on Spotify, visit us on the web, www.njrevolutionradio.com. That's like new journalism, revolution radio spelled out .com.
Okay, not a problem. Excellent. Now, we only got about 3 minutes before we have to cut out because it's 8:57 as we speak. Bart. So I want to let everybody know that I got some appearances that in the next couple of days, if you guys want to see me. First, I want to just mention, we all know about the so-called White Lives Matter stuff that's happening on April 11th. There's supposed to be something happening at the Ohio State House. And even though there was an announcement that the New Jersey New Jersey European Heritage Association was about to do something in Philly, they came back and said, no, we're not doing anything. Leave us alone. You're scaring us. So that we don't have to worry about. We don't have to worry about that. You never have to worry about
keep an eye on it.
But what I really want folks to be around for, I have two things that are that I'm going to be involved with over the next couple of days. Basically, it's going to be two video webinars, and y'all can participate in them. The first one is tomorrow. First one is tomorrow at 6:00, and it's called Hate Had a Home Here. And we're going to be talking about, in particular, the American far right and its history at Michigan State University. Michigan State University has some hella history in regards to that just a couple of years ago. And yes, American Renaissance was involved in it in some fashion, and I'll explain tomorrow how that happened. So if you want more information about that, the link is right there on the screen, and that will also be on the we'll put it on the YouTube channel. We'll put it on the YouTube channel, just so that everybody has it if they want to find some more information in regards to it. The other event that I will be participating in is called, well, it's basically the Far Right, Fascism, and Insurrection. It's a Zoom event. And this is put together by the SOMA Action Religious Justice and Racial Justice Committees. And I've worked with them before. They're here in New Jersey. And this is going to be where we start talking about, where we will talk about all of it. What we've seen on January 6th, what we've seen for over the past 4 years. And the link to that is on the screen right now. Remember that we're talking about Holocaust Remembrance Day. That's what this is. So we're going to be talking about anti-Semitism. We're going to be talking about anti-Asian hate while we're at it. We're going to be talking about it all because actually all lives matter. They really do. We're the ones that can actually say it and mean it. But we are going to be talking. Hey, there's a cat.
I prefer that we don't say it at all.
Only because the conservatives bastardized the fact. But yeah, it is true.
Yeah, the they fact can. Of the matter, let's just give
all lives matter, but we'll show it. We will always show that all lives matter. We believe that all lives matter when those kids were in damn cages, and they still are. All lives matter to us, but not them that time. So let's just be clear. Yes, we're going to be talking about a lot of things on Thursday and on Wednesday. So hopefully everybody can participate in both those events. I hope to see you there. Anti-Missouri was saying, am I going to Memphis next month? You're going to have to hit me up about that one. I don't know. I'm not sure I am aware of what's supposed to be going on with in Memphis. I know I'm going to be in Tennessee in May. The American Renaissance Conference doesn't really look like it's happening. We're running late, so I'll make this quick. American Renaissance Conference doesn't look like it's happening, but we're going to be doing something, and we'll keep you posted on that. I'll put that up on the wall. I'll put that up on idevox.com when we get a chance. So I'll just tell you flat out, and yes, Warren, yeah, all lives can't matter till we destroy white supremacy. I would just simply say, keep it in the forefront of your mind that I give a damn about everybody out there. I give a damn about everybody until you make me feel like I don't need to give a damn about you. So that's where I'm coming from when I say that.
Can we use that as our slogan instead? Can we use that as our slogan? I give a damn about everybody. I like that as a slogan.
I'll tell you like this. Michael Frantic from Spearhead. There was a band called Spearhead back in the day, and it was led by this dude named Michael Frantic, Disposable Heroes of Hypocrisy and all that. He still is a badass. He had a song after Michael Brown got killed in Ferguson. And if you can find it on online, it was a beautiful song. In the video, you see the sign, you see the graffiti that says All Lives Matter, because Black Lives Matter just came out. So when he had the graffiti or had the tag All Lives Matter, it was before the conservatives took that tag over to try to excuse the fact that they don't think all lives matter. So I'll just tell you. I'll just end this show with a line from one of his songs from the Spearhead album, Home. He goes, a piece of peace for you, a piece of peace for me, a piece of peace for every single person that you see, a piece of peace for you, a piece of peace for me. But I don't act peaceful if you're not that way to me. And that's the real. I'll see y'all next week, y'all. Peace.
Tune in tomorrow night for NJRR Live on Revolution Radio, 8 p.m. Tell your friends, share, and like our YouTubes, because we need more friends out there doing that kind of stuff. We love you, too. Those saying I love you on the screen, we love you, too. Peace.